I once saw a red-bellied black snake in inner city Sydney, and it scared the crap out of me. See, we don't actually have that many venomous snakes in Australia. I mean, we do, but you don't see them. Definitely not in big cities. Definitely not in Sydney. And this is probably one of the things that shocks foreigners when they first come to Australia. There are a lot of dangerous things here, but you don't see them. That and Australians have a very sarcastic sense of humour. And we don't actually drink Fosters. And we do eat a lot of Thai food. And this place is enormous and diverse, and it's impossible to cover in a single holiday. Hi, I'm Ben Groundwater, and you're listening to Flight of Fancy, the Traveller.com.au podcast. Today, we're not looking at the world, but rather at how the world looks at us. We're talking about Australians and the country we inhabit. We're covering all the quirks and eccentricities, all the surprises that are in store for people who think this place is just like the castle or Crocodile Dundee. And joining me to do that are two travellers who've each had the experience of arriving on these fair shores and trying to figure the whole thing out. First up, she's a journalist and author who's still not a big fan of huntsman spiders, Sue Williams. Hi, Sue.
Hi, Ben.
Thanks so much for joining us. Also with us, he's an award-winning writer who's still looking for his first pint of Foster's, Rob McFarlane. Hi, Rob. How are you?
Good, mate. How are you?
Now, guys, thanks for joining me. I was thinking as I was reading out that intro that maybe we actually are like the castle. Is that one of the surprises? Does Australia have an element of that?
I think so, yeah. I think there is an element.
There's some truth to it.
Certainly sound like that. I mean, those sort of movies are always sort of exaggerated.
Yeah, because Crocodile Dundee was so exaggerated for what I feel like is an American audience, whereas The Castle was maybe exaggerated for an Australian audience. There are actually some things that we do that are covered in there.
It's kind of modest and humble and kind of very, very funny. I think it's very self-effacing, which is very much an Australian sense of humour, really.
Yeah, also kind of dumb, which we have sometimes
can
as
be,
well.
As we all can be.
Can you guys remember what you thought about Australia before you arrived here? What were your thoughts about this country before you got here?
I was genuinely terrified before I came here,
and right.
Mostly for the reason that you described, because there's this perception outside of Australia that it has all the most dangerous things in the world on this one country.
Yep.
And so I genuinely thought that the minute I stepped off the plane, I was going to get attacked by snakes and spiders and crocs and sharks.
Every
and
lake has a crocodile. Every beach has Irukandji.
Exactly. And what's interesting is that perception is definitely still out there. So when I speak to people as I'm traveling and I say that I live in Australia and they talk about coming here, one of their big fears is exactly this sort of zoo of exotic, dangerous animals that we have. And, you know, I live in Sydney and unlike in Redfern, I've never seen a dangerous snake or a dangerous spider. So I've yet to sort of see evidence of that. But that was definitely a perception I had.
How about you, Sue? What did you think about
that? Well, I was really excited about coming here. And before I came here, because I'm from England, I've been here nearly 30 years now. Before I came here, I travelled a lot and met lots of Australians overseas. And they were always so friendly and quite intrepid and adventurous and fun. And so I was really excited about what Australians would be here. And I was also really excited about the prospect of seeing kangaroos everywhere in Hyde Park, everywhere, crossing the road in the CBD. I thought that would be such a colourful, fun thing.
Yeah, right. I had some friends who came over here. They were from Estonia, actually. They came and stayed in Sydney. It was their first time in Sydney. And they were staying with some other friends of mine up in Gordon in the north of Sydney, on the North Shore. And they'd been here for a couple of days and they went into the city, took the train to the city and they came back and our friend said, how was it? And they said, oh, it was great. We finally saw our first kangaroo just down at the train station. So that was nice. And our friend's like, you what? You saw a kangaroo at an inner city train station? And apparently they did, but they just thought that was a standard thing. They weren't that excited by it because obviously there would be kangaroos.
It wasn't
kangaroos
a Greenpeace kangaroo.
No. It was an actual kangaroo.
An inflatable kangaroo.
It was not. No. It was an actual kangaroo.
Well,
I've been here 18 years, Gordon train station. I know. It's fairly bizarre. Okay. But I genuinely did see a red-bellied black snake in Redfern in inner city Sydney.
Wow.
And I was petrified. I don't deal well with that either. I don't think many Australians do. There's probably, you know, people who live out in the bush who are pretty comfortable with that, but us city types, not so much.
Not so much.
We're not really that tough at all.
Yeah, quick photo, then run.
Yeah. Yes. So what surprised you guys when you arrived? Sue, what really shocked you first up?
I think, well, when I first moved here, I moved into inner city Sydney, and it rained every single day of that winter, and it was so cold.
Yeah, right.
I had no idea it was ever cold in Australia. I thought it was always going to be hot and sunny all year round.
I think, Rob, you were saying that was a surprise for
you
as well.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I've genuinely been colder here in winter than I ever was in the UK because we have central heating and we're sort of equipped for that. Whereas
Australian houses, I mean, particularly once you get north of Melbourne, essentially, they're not built for cold weather.
Totally, yeah. And there's this element of, oh, it's only winter, it'll be gone in a couple of months and it'll be fine again. And it lingers. I mean, I've been sitting at home with gloves and hats and scarves and stuff on. So I think That definitely. But there's definitely a perception that it is sunny all year round here outside of Australia, and that genuinely isn't the case.
So what about Australians themselves? Were there surprises about us?
There were a few surprises, but one of the most delightful surprises was how friendly they are.
Yeah.
I find Australians incredibly friendly.
Because sometimes people are travelling, they're different to when they're at home. I don't think you can rely on...
No, that's true. But when I came here, I discovered how friendly Australians were. Yeah. They're always happy to talk to you. And going into shops, people chat to you. Everywhere on public transport, people talk to you. And obviously, in London, as most of us know, I mean, people would never dream of talking to you on the tube.
Yeah.
You know, everybody is very keen to keep their eyes down on a newspaper or on their phone. But people here are just so friendly.
Yeah. How did you meet people first up? Were you sort of hang around in pubs and people would approach you? Or
Coffee shops. And I kind of would go and join clubs and would go out and try and meet people and engage in conversation. And people were really, really open and friendly. And people back in, when I'd lived in London and met Australians there, they would say, oh, English people are kind of a little bit friendly. They're always saying, come to dinner. But then the invitation never actually arrives. Whereas with Australians, they would say, come to dinner. And they genuinely meant it. Mm. And I went to many dinners in the first year. It was incredible, really. Right.
Okay, well, that's good to hear. How about you, Rob?
I agree. I almost found their sort of friendliness a little confronting initially.
One of Sue's friends used the term, aggressively friendly.
Yeah, aggressively
friendly. It really is... And just the way that I think particularly in England, we wrap a lot of things up in a lot of unnecessary sort of pleasantries.
Right.
So we'll go to say something and we'll take five times the number of words that we need to, whereas Australians are just direct and like straight to the point.
Yeah.
And that's quite, and I find this a little bit about Americans as well. There's a little sort of almost in your face friendliness, which is, it took me a little while to get used to that. And it was almost a sort of a communication issue. I mean, I'd say to someone, oh, if it's not too much trouble, there's any chance you might be able to pass the ketchup. because we always wrap a question in all these unnecessary...
Right.
And they would look at me and just say, why don't you just say pass the ketchup? Yeah. You know, what are you, madman? What are you doing with
the extra
work?
Do you feel like
you've
changed or have you still held on to sort of some of that Britishness about you?
I think I still... There's certainly... My accent's definitely changed. Yeah. Mum definitely thinks I sound like Crocodile Dundee now whenever I call home.
It's just such a broad Australian accent.
Australians still think I sound like the Earl of Worcester, so I'm sort of caught between these two. But I think I've clung on to that a little bit because that's sort of quite ingrained.
Yeah.
But I've definitely mellowed in lots. And just the way that you say words, like even the way I say Australia is more Australian than it is sort of English.
Yeah.
And you try and use terms that are going to be more understandable, I guess, over here.
Yeah.
But those sort of things that you learn as a kid, like sort of politeness and things like that, I think they tend to be quite ingrained. So I think I haven't dropped that yet.
So were you surprised at all by the ethnic diversity in Australia?
Oh, very much so.
Because I think if you just see TV about Australia, our TV is very white.
Mm.
And so you just assume that basically everyone's an Anglo-Saxon until you get here.
Yeah, because you're used to seeing Neighbours and Home and Away.
Right.
And
yeah.
Most people are white on those
they
shows,
are,
really.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was really surprised. And going into pubs and there was kind of Thai foods being served in pubs, that was a real shock for me.
Yeah.
And just seeing the diversity of people around, it was fantastic. And I love it the way there are kind of enclaves of different groups of ethnicities around Sydney and in Melbourne and in many other country towns as well. I really like that. It's something that's really nice to be celebrated. It's great going to Cabramatta and having a wonderful Vietnamese meal in the same way, Ligon Street, going having great Italian. It's I think it's fantastic having that range of nations here.
Mm. Yeah. Was that unexpected for you as well?
Totally. And I totally agree. It's something that really isn't sort of broadcast to the world. And so certainly the Asian influence here was something I had no idea. I moved into Ultimo, which is a suburb in Sydney.
Yeah.
And that's sort of quite near Chinatown. Mm. And I would have probably been one of the only sort of Anglo-Saxon people in my building.
Right.
And so that was a total shock.
Yeah.
And I think that definitely should be, I don't know, broadcast or, you know, we should make more of that, diversity.
Yeah, and you guys were both surprised by Thai food. I didn't realise this was such a thing that was different to the rest of the world.
I mean, I think the favourite takeaway in the UK now is curry, sort of Indian curry.
Right.
And that has nowhere near the same popularity over here than Asian, you know, different types of Asian
cuisine. Thai is pretty much the national dish here, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I'd never had a pad thai before I came here. I mean, it's just not...
Had you heard of it?
No, I don't think I really have. I mean, Thai isn't really a big sort of cuisine
in Britain. It's
England.
Mostly Indian or it's Chinese, right?
Yeah.
Those were the two kind of ethnic foods that we grew up with. So Thai was a complete revelation and wonderful food.
Oh,
yeah.
Totally. Yeah. I'm much healthier as a result of discovering that than I was.
Even more than like pork pies and Yorkshire puddings and
not
stuff.
Not so many Yorkshire puddings. Right.
Yeah. And Rob, you were saying that you were sort of surprised by Australians' willingness to acknowledge their convict past.
Totally. I thought that would be a real sort of thing of shame. And yet I've spoken to people and they hold it up as a real badge of honour that they were, and I can't remember what the exact term is, but like a sort of a, you know, genuine convict. So like both their parents were convicts. So they're like 100% convict. And it's
zip up your bag when you hear that and like put it under your seat or something. Yeah.
Get my fanny pack out. That was a real surprise. I thought, I was sort of interested to see how Australians would deal with that.
Right.
With that heritage, as it were.
Yeah.
And as I say, most of the people I've spoken to have been very upfront about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of fun, isn't it? Because it's kind of like an up you to Britain, isn't it, really? It's
very
kind of saying,
so.
We're here, you're over there. Mm. Who did the best,
totally,
really?
Yeah. Look at where we live. Didn't this pan out well?
Well, there's a chant at the cricket when the Ashes are on that people sing, you sent us to a tropical paradise. And maybe people are embracing that. Yeah. Intrepid Travel can help you experience the wackiness of Australia on one of their small group tours. Whether you'd like to drive the Great Ocean Road and check out the 12 Apostles, even though there are only actually 8 left, visit the underground township of Coober Pedy in the outback, or meet some pretty unusual wildlife in the Top End, there are plenty of unique experiences to suit every traveller. Plus, you'll be accompanied by a local leader the whole way, who'll help translate the Aussie slang. Check out their range of trips at intrepidtravel.com/Australia. What about this idea of a fair go? To me, sometimes it seems like a bit of a myth, a national myth that we love to trundle out. But Sue, did you feel that was a real thing?
Absolutely. I think coming from Britain, Britain is kind of very, very hierarchical, and it's perhaps a bit less so now than maybe 30 years ago, but it's still quite hierarchical. It's still very much class bound.
Yeah.
Sometimes you'll go for work and they'll say, which college did you go to? What was your degree in?
Right.
What mark did you get? Whereas in Australia, nobody ever said that. They'd give you a chance to do a job, and if you were good at it, great.
Yeah.
If you weren't very good at it, they'd kind of move you off sideways. But people were very, very willing to give you a go and just see how you got on in that position. And I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah.
That was really refreshing.
Right, okay. Although, Rob, you were saying you felt like there is a class system in Australia.
I do. I sort of disagree with that. It might be because, I mean, I've been here 18 years, and so you've obviously been here longer. But I don't think there's a class system based on the sort of aristocracy that we have. You know, no one's a lord or an earl here.
Yeah.
But I definitely think there's a class system based on wealth. So if you've grown up in the eastern suburbs, and I definitely hear people talking about the schools they went to, you know, if they went to a particular private school, that sort of still is held up as a bit of a badge of honour and as a way of distinguishing people. And even if you look at the suburbs in Sydney, there's a huge variation in terms of wealth and opportunity between, you know, some of the western suburbs and there is in the eastern suburbs. So while it's not as obvious in terms of sort of titles as it is in the UK, I think that's definitely crept in, and potentially it's since I've been here.
Yeah,
but I
grew up in Queensland, and certainly being in Brisbane at uni, and even after that, everyone asked where you went to school.
Right.
That was still a thing.
Yeah, and even between states, I mean, you know, Queenslanders get a lot of mocking and sort of ribbing. No one mentioned this.
We do.
But here there is fluidity between the different classes. Absolutely, there are, you know, people who are very poor and people don't have much opportunity, but there is some fluidity. Whereas in Britain, it's much more difficult to progress between the different classes.
Absolutely, unless you marry a prince as has happened recently.
Just throwing a bit of shade here at the royals.
Yes.
Well done.
No, I agree. It's more difficult to navigate that system.
Yeah. I had an American friend who moved over here, and she was very surprised by the fact that people shortened her name immediately without asking her. This is at work, you know, people would be sending her emails. Her name's Roxanne, and people would email her and say, hey, Rox or Roxy. And she would think, that's a little bit, you know, overly friendly, isn't it? Did you find that as well, Sue?
Yeah, it's interesting. I've just come back from Britain. I went over there for a few weeks, and a friend of mine was saying how offensive he found it when people responded to an email with, hi, Ian, rather than Dear Ian.
Oh, really?
And I thought, oh, my God, this is England in the 2018.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Incredible. So, yeah, it's still quite surprising to an awful lot of people. I love it now. I love that informality. It's wonderful. But I remember doing a bit of work for SBS television, and I went into the studios once, and everybody sitting there went, oh, God, not another Anglo. And I said, oh, I'm sorry. And then they all laughed, and it was fine. So it's kind of very... very interesting, really, how that
works. The same thing happens with Kiwis. I met someone the other day, and I'm terrible at spotting Australian, despite the fact that I've got a New Zealand father. I'm really bad at spotting the difference between the accent. And I said, oh, are you from New Zealand? And this girl said, oh, yes, I am. Sorry. And it was that sort of self-deprecating, and she was joking. Yeah, yeah. And so again, yeah. It's a bit, there's that just sort of nice banter, which I think whole is, you know, is healthy and is fine.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I always get that when I go to New Zealand. People say, oh, you're over from the West Island, are you? I'm like, yeah, yeah. And they say, oh, well, you know, no one's perfect. Thanks, guys. We've mentioned Thai food already, but were there other things about food in Australia that surprised you guys? Was it more diverse than you thought it would be?
Absolutely. I saw a lot of vegetables and fruit here that I've never seen back home ever.
Yeah. So did Rob, actually. You saw celery for the first time when you came over to my place, didn't you?
I did. Yeah, that's, I've never seen any vegetables before I came to Australia.
But what it was, obviously Thai food is a thing.
Yep, Thai food, Middle Eastern food, yep. lot of that here. And great coffee here. Wow.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And
the level of obsession about coffee a surprise as well? Because people are pretty into it. Or maybe 30
yeah,
years
but
ago
I've
they
kind
weren't.
Of, I've kind of bought into that wholesale. Yeah, I'm really into it hugely too.
Yeah.
But when I went back to Britain, I was really surprised. I went into a cafe and I went there because I could see they had a proper coffee machine.
Right.
And when I ordered a coffee, they brought the coffee from out the back somewhere. And I said, why aren't you making it in the coffee machine? And they said, no, we get here in the morning, make all the coffee in the coffee machine, put it into jugs, and then warm it up when people order it. I thought,
stick
wow,
it in the microwave.
That's amazing. Yeah. So not much has changed with coffee in Britain, but coffee here is just fabulous. Mm.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, even I've jumped on board that train.
Yeah. But did the obsession surprise you? Because, I mean, Australia doesn't seem like the sort of place that would be a coffee destination.
Yeah, and that, I think, is that almost that sort of snobbery that's creeping into Australian culture in certain places that probably wasn't here 30 years ago. I mean, yeah. I certainly think that's happened in the last 5 years. I mean, probably in Melbourne it happened before then, but in Sydney, that sort of coffee obsession is a relatively recent thing.
Yeah, right, okay.
And so...
Probably the food obsession as well. I think it's really taken hold in the last 5 years or so.
Yeah, I mean, Australians become really proud of its food and its produce and its... And it's sort of making a name for itself with its own cuisine, which I guess it probably didn't have before. I imagine it was fairly sort of English-based cuisine. So I think there's that. And that sense of cultural identity, that was also something that surprised me, how strong the sense of Australian cultural identity was. So that whole expression of something being un-Australian, I mean, we don't have that expression in English. I mean, you would never say, you know, that's un-English or...
Well, it would sound terrible for a start.
I mean, you might say, oh, that's just not cricket or something ridiculous like that. But it's a really strong, for a relatively sort of young country, there's a real strong sense of
cultural
identity.
So did Australia Day surprise you guys that there was so much fanfare about this?
Yeah. I went to Dubbo one time for Australia Day and the whole town stopped and it was huge. The mayor making speeches, brass bands. It was fantastic.
Totally. Yeah, and I think that patriotism, Australia Day, you know, as much as anything else, is a good thing, I think. And Americans do that as well. They really celebrate being American and what that stands for. I think English people are almost a little ashamed of it sometimes. And often there's a sort of far right, you know, association with showing the national, you know, the flag and what have you. And I think it's nice that hasn't happened over here so much, that people are prouder to be Australian and just to stand up for that.
And they don't take it too seriously. You know, we have a sausage sizzle and all that kind of stuff. And it's kind of fun and it's modest and it's just jocular. And
We don't drink Foster's here.
No, was weird because I'd worked in London in the Australia-New Zealand bar.
Yep.
And all we sold was Foster's to Australians and New Zealanders. So I couldn't believe coming over here. And it wasn't really there.
Right,
you know,
not
it
at
was
all.
Absent. Yeah. That was bizarre.
I mean, that is genius marketing, isn't it? Because Foster's still run adverts. You know, I was back in the UK recently, and they still run adverts over there sort of promoting their Australianness.
Yeah,
and often the adverts are really funny, and anyone who hadn't been here would definitely associate them as the beer to drink when you came to Australia.
Yep.
And as you say, you can rarely
You'll
even
do well
find
to
it.
Find it at all. How about the sheer size of Australia? I had an English cousin came over and stayed with me when I was growing up, and he asked my dad to borrow the car so he could drive to Cairns for the weekend, which would have been about a 14 or 15-hour drive.
Yep.
Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think you can picture just how big it is until you get here.
No, that's right. I think it's very, very hard. I mean, in Britain, we used to go on holiday, and it would be a 3-hour drive, and we'd get up at 4 in the morning to beat the traffic and arrive before the gates even opened.
Yeah.
And I think it's just impossible to understand, because as well, we use planes like other people use trains and buses.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think we kind of end up accepting the distances.
It's a real mindset thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You think to yourself, 8 hours driving, that's fine, that's no problem. Whereas in the UK, if you drive 8 hours, you know, you've fallen off the side of the continent.
The same as here, you think, a 7-hour flight somewhere, well, that's quite luxurious, really. It's not very far at all.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas, I think all those concepts have just get recalibrated when you come over here. And I think also because of the sort of how sparsely populated Australia is. So often you're not doing those sort of trips that often. You know, you often just sort of stay in the city that you're visiting or living in. And that would be, I guess, my advice to anyone visiting is to get out and do that, because then you could easily come to Australia and come to Sydney or Melbourne and not have an appreciation of that size. Mm. Whereas you go and backpack up the East Coast or, I don't know, go to Perth or something, take one of the long distance train journeys, it's only then that you get that real appreciation of, wow, this is huge and there's literally like nothing in the middle. And that's a really alien concept, I think, for a lot
of people. And visiting the outback is a wonderful thing to do for overseas visitors, really. I mean, it's a great thing to do for Australians. A lot of Australians have never been there as well. And when you go out into the outback and you see those kind of sheer distances, that, you know, really wide horizon and kind of nothing there, and then start appreciating the sort of stark beauty of the landscape, I think that's a really wonderful thing. It can be quite mind-blowing the first few times, but it's a wonderful thing for anyone to experience, I think.
Yeah, and I'm interested in how being in Australia has sort of changed your perceptions of your own countries as well, because I know, Sue, you were saying that maybe it was the emptiness of the outback, but it made you feel like the UK is a very crowded country.
Oh, absolutely. It really does feel very crowded in some areas, especially in London and big cities, really. And people seem to be a bit miserable and depressed and grumpy and negative. I really notice that now whenever I go back. I think, as Australians, we're kind of quite sunny and positive and outgoing, whereas Britain's, it's different. I mean, maybe it's the weather. I don't know. We always thought maybe it's because there's just not enough sunshine in Britain. I don't know. But Australians in Britain always used to say to me, it's incredible how low your sky is. And now when I go back to Britain, I really notice how low the sky is, because you can't actually see the blue sky beyond the clouds.
Right.
Really.
Yeah, that's interesting. Rob, has your ideas about the UK changed since being here?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And both in a good and a bad way. And I totally agree. Every time I go home, the sort of infrastructure there is based on a sort of medieval system. So everything's smaller and everything's laneways and everything feels very squeezed together. And so it definitely feels sort of overcrowded, and that's almost claustrophobic feeling when you get one of those sort of low grey skies. But it's also made me appreciate the good things about England and the culture and the history and the countryside. And often you need to go away in order to come back and appreciate that. I mean, my mum used to drag me around castles and forts and abbeys and stuff as a kid, and I hated all that. Right. And now I find myself, you know, taking people or visitors there to see those things.
Dragging kids along.
This is 1,000 years old. This is amazing. My parents used to live in like a 15th century sort of thatched cottage, and growing up, I never even thought about that. And now, how cool was that?
You guys are like the token, you know, the English people that we as Australians picture. And then you get there and expect not to find them. But there you go. They're living in a 15th century abbey with a thatched roof.
Right.
It really happens. Do you guys feel Australian now? So you were saying you've started smiling at people on the tube in London, which is insane.
And I try. Yes, it's right. And I try to strike up a conversation. Right. And sometimes it works, surprisingly. I feel very Australian now.
Yeah, right.
And like my English friends would say to me, gosh, you've got such a strong Australian accent, in the same way Rob was saying. Whereas Australians will still say, what part of England are you from? Which is a bit disappointing. But I've always tried hard to get an Australian accent, because I think it's such a great accent, apart from some areas. Maybe Queensland, maybe. But no.
Well, there you go. You've taken that on as well, making fun of Queenslanders. No, so that's really our Australian.
Yeah. But when I do go back to England, I kind of feel a little bit English, and then I remember, no, I actually live in Australia, and I feel enormously relieved. Isn't that terrible? I mean, England's a great country.
No, I mean, that's a good thing.
It's wonderful, but I really miss Australia when I leave it.
Yeah. How about you, Rob? Are you Australian now?
I think so. I mean, when people ask me when I'm traveling, it's interesting. If I say, where are you from? I will say, I'm Australian. Normally because it sounds more exotic than English. And you normally get a better response to when you say that. And so I this is my sort of home. I go back to the UK every year to visit family, but this is where I live. This is where my sort of home is. So I definitely feel, and I've tried to, and I think this can be the problem. Like, I love the phrase g'day. I think it's just like the perfect greeting.
Yeah.
But when you say that with a very English accent, you sort of get this narrowed eyed look. Like, are you taking the mick out of me? Because I come and say, oh,
g'day. Do you say g'day?
My name's Rob.
Or a good day?
Yeah. Well, especially when I first came over here, I embraced that greeting. Yeah. And I would say, oh, g'day, I'm Rob. Or I'm Robert. And people would sort of look at me and say, are you taking the piss?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, but yes, I definitely associate myself more with that now than English.
Yeah. Having said that you now feel Australian, are there things about the country that continually surprise you, that still take you unawares?
Yes. Yeah, they do. Especially going into the outback sometimes. Yeah. How amazingly people friendly there, even more friendlier than in the cities. That's fantastic. Like some of the road systems are pretty awful in Australia.
Right, you know,
kind of going out of some of the main cities, that can be really difficult.
The complete lack of public transport. I'm Australian and that still surprises me.
Yep, sure. And also maybe the lack of understanding of Aboriginal people and the lack of appreciation of amazing Aboriginal culture. I just went on a trip to the Kimberley and it was just fabulous looking at all the Aboriginal art in these ancient rock art galleries. It was quite astonishing. And most of the Australians on board were saying, you know, I just never realised it could actually be like this.
Yeah. And I still get so frustrated when I travel with other Australians and into these other countries and you hear other Australians say things like, oh, you know, well, we're such a young country, so, and you know, then go on to say something. And I think to myself, no, we're not. We're like really old country, which we should be far more proud of.
Sure. That really. You can go to the Middle East and you can look at castles which are, you know, 600 years BC. Really, for us, that's very, very recent.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we need to embrace that a bit more. What about you, Rob?
I think...
You said you're surprised by real estate prices.
Yeah, that surprises me on a daily basis. Right. I don't know how they continually keep going up and people can afford to live here.
I'm just waiting for the crash. Come on, crash.
Someone's been moving
to
England.
And I'm getting in the market.
I've been waiting. So that, that surprises me. I don't know. I think the problem is once you've been here for a while, it's harder to be surprised by some of those things. And so when we first started talking about this topic, I was thinking, well, how did I feel 18 years ago? It's quite hard to sort of cast your mind back. And so now a lot of the things that I probably would have been surprised about when I first arrived, and now just, well, that's just the way things are.
You're not surprised when people whinge about the weather anymore?
No, I mean, and that happens much more than people would claim. I mean, you know, English people are always made out to be the whinging poms. Yep. I hear people whinging here about the weather as much as they ever do in England.
Yeah.
So that is definitely that's definitely a fallacy.
Something we've clung to from quite a long time ago. Guys, I was thinking to finish off, let's talk about maybe a favourite place of yours that people should go to really experience what is Australia and to take on a lot of these things that were surprising to us in the first place. Where would you recommend people go?
I think Uluru.
Oh,
I think every visitor to Australia should go to Uluru, really. I mean, I think most of them go to Sydney, to Melbourne, maybe up to Cairns, Port Douglas. But I think Uluru is just an amazing place to go and see and go and kind of see Aboriginal culture. To see nature, to see that incredible monolith, the real sort of spiritual centre of Australia. It just has a vibrancy there and a feeling that you won't get anywhere else in the world.
Yeah, right. How about you, Rob?
Unfortunately, we're saying exactly the same thing. So we should have chatted about this before, shouldn't we? I was so reluctant to go to Uluru. I came over here backpacking with a girlfriend, and she really wanted to go there, and I really dug my heels in. I was like, look, we know what it looks like. We've seen a million postcards. It's incredibly, you know, it's quite difficult and quite expensive to get there. I am so pleased I went there. I mean, I'm not a particularly spiritual person, but there is definitely something about that place which is really magical. And I actually did a trip, a sort of an overland trip from Adelaide up to Darwin. Mm-hmm. And that leaving a city and going into the outback, that sort of transition was really sort of informative and interesting. And then arriving in the Northern Territory, which is another whole ball game. If people just came to Australia and just saw Sydney and Melbourne and they didn't see any of that, they would leave with a very different impression, I think, of the country and its heritage and its origins and all those things.
Right. Well, you know what I'm going to say? Queensland. You want to experience Australia? Go to Queensland. You've got snakes, you've got spiders, you've got irukandji, you've got crocodiles, you've got the Great Barrier Reef, you've got bogans, you've got cities, you've got Thai food. You know, that is the heart of Australia right there. Get on board.
That's some outback.
You got it all. Robert Farlan, Sue Williams, thanks so much for joining me today. Really appreciate your time.
Pleasure.
If you'd like to read stories by Rob or Sue or me, you can find them at traveller.com.au. And if you'd like to subscribe to this podcast, check us out on iTunes or your favourite podcasting app. And we'll see you next time on Flight of Pants.